So friends, as already announced, the topic of today's short talk followed by discussions is on the subject, the teachings of Guru Nanak. This is in context of Guru Nanak Jayanti, which is observed by the Sikh community all over the world on Kartik Purnima, also known as Tripurari Purnima. And this year, Kartik Purnima falls on November 10th. So Guru Nanak Jayanti is observed all over the world on November 10th this year. Nanak Dev is seen as the founder of Sikhism, the first guru of the Sikh religion. But when one studies his teachings and when one studies the events of his life itself being a message, we will be convinced that he did not come to establish any religion. He did not come to found any religion. None of the true teachers, none of the great teachers who come to show what is the true way of life ever come to found a religion, to establish a religion. They come to clear the misconceptions in the minds of men and show the age-old, ancient Arya Marga. And subsequently, over the years, the spirit of the teachings is invariably materialized when unprepared minds try to interpret it, and then a formalized religion is formed of it, and rituals and ceremonies and so many other things is built around the spirit of the teacher's words. So Nanak Dev did not come to establish any Sikh religion or any such thing. What we will do in the course of today's talk is we will consider a few important and very interesting incidents in the life of Nanak Dev, because his life and his the incidents of his life itself contain so much of his teachings, and also some of his teachings in poem form which have been included in the Guru Granth Sahib. So Nanak Dev was born in the Talwandi, which is in today's Pakistan, the Punjab province of today's Pakistan, in the year 1469 AD. His mother was Tripta Devi and his father Kalyan Chand Das Bedi, and he was born in the Kshatriya Hindu, the Bedi clan of Kshatriya Hindus. So his father was popularly known as Mehta Kalu, and he was the chief accountant of the village, a Patwari. And when Nanak was born, the astrologer who drew the charts of the newborn child proclaimed that this boy will be of a very deep spiritual disposition, which would influence many, many, many over the course of his life, and that he would be equally respected by Muslims and Hindus all over the place, wherever he is. This is what the astrologer proclaims about Nanak Dev. The time of the birth of this great teacher is also very significant. In 1193, after Muhammad Ghori's conquest of India right up to Delhi, the relationship between Hindus and Muslims had become very, very hostile. There was no religious harmony, and religious intolerance was prevalent everywhere. And it is at this, the effect of this in the 15th century that was felt. It is at this situation of, in the midst of two hostile communities, that Nanak Dev was born in a predominantly Muslim village to a Hindu parents. So Nanak, a great moral and spiritual reformer, he, when we study his works, we'll come to know that he brought about understanding between these two principal religious communities by showing them that the root of not only these two religions, but the root of all religions is one. All religions spring from one source. This is the conclusion we reach when we study the teachings of Nanak. So, as a very young boy, Nanak was assigned the task of a herd boy. That is, he had to mind the farm animals which his family had, a few cows and a few buffaloes. He had to make sure that they did not, that while they grazed, they kept away from the family's garden plot, and also he had to make sure that they did not stray into the neighbor's agricultural field and do any mischief. So there were rice paddies and sugarcane fields and wheat fields and other crops which the small farming communities of that village had, and he had to make sure that the livestock did not stray into these fields and cause any harm to the crop. So Nanak was given this task, and while the herd grazed in the pasture, Nanak passed his time in deep contemplation and meditation. Even as a very, very young boy of just four or five years, he had immersed himself in deep contemplation while the cows and the buffaloes were grazing in the pasture. So once it so happened that while he was in deep contemplation, the herd wanders into the neighboring fields. The buffaloes waded into the paddy field and destroys the fields of his neighbor's farm. The cows enter the garden and eat all the produce that is there. And Nanak is awakened by the commotion that is caused, and he finds that the animals have strayed into the neighboring field. So he gathers all these all the buffaloes and cows and drives them back home. But the neighboring farmer finds that his crop is all damaged, and he comes running to his Nanak Dev's father and complains bitterly about the damage that is caused by the animals. And he claims that Nanak Dev's father, Mehta Kalu, has to compensate for the huge loss that this small-time farmer has incurred. So he says that the assessment of damage has to be done by the village chief, the village landlord, who is Rai Bullar Bhatti. And so they call Rai Bullar Bhatti to assess the damage that is caused in the field. And when Bhatti comes and examines the field, miraculously, there is not even a slightest damage that is caused even to a single crop in the field. So all the villagers criticize this other farmer, saying he unjustly accused Nanak Dev of causing such mischief. And Nanak Dev's father, in fact, rebukes and criticizes his own son, saying he always wastes his time in thinking useless things, and he is not attending to his job of making sure that the animals are in control. But Bhatti, the village chief, recognizes that this is not an ordinary incident. So he gently suggests to Mehta Kalu that your son is not, it doesn't look like your son is meant for these ordinary farming and things, he has a higher purpose in life. So that is what Rai Bullar Bhatti suggests to Nanak Dev's father. And at this very young age, Nanak Dev always had a spiritual perspective about all the worldly things that we see around ourselves. He saw a spiritual counterpart in all the physical activities that we do. For example, about the duties of a Kshatriya. This is what he says. He says, he alone is a Kshatriya who is a hero of good deeds, a hero of good deeds. He makes use of his body to give charity. He understands his form and plants the seeds of generosity. Such a Kshatriya is accepted in the Lord's court. Whoso practices greed, possessiveness and falsehood, he receives the fruits of his own labors. So we see that in this poem and also in the various other poems that Nanak Dev composed, few of which we will consider in the course of our talk, we will find that Nanak Dev always used the analogy to describe in simple words profound truths. The physical activities that we do, such as farming, such as animals grazing in the field, and so on and so forth, he used these similes and these examples to draw our attention and mind to higher spiritual things. And further he says that you yourself are the cows and you yourself are the grazer. You yourself are the cow and you yourself are the grazer. Another incident happens in the life of this young boy, where one day Nanak doesn't return home in the afternoon, and Nanak Dev's father comes looking, searching for his son. He doesn't find him anywhere, and Bhatti also comes in his horse and finds that Mehta Kalu is searching for his son. So he goes around the field and tries to find his son, tries to find Nanak Dev, and he finds that there is a ferocious cobra that has opened its hood and which is sitting there. And so he motions others to just stop where they are, and carefully goes near the cobra, and to his astonishment and surprise, he finds that the cobra is in fact providing shade from the harsh rays of the sun to this young boy who is in a meditative trance. So Bhatti is convinced that this is no ordinary boy, and he urges Guru Nanak's father to enroll Nanak into school and give him, make him learn things and give him good education. So Bhatti arranges for instruction and education of Nanak in the local school, and to the amazement of his Nanak Dev's teachers, Nanak learns everything very fast. His ability is amazing to their, to his teachers' astonishment. So his first assignment is given to write the alphabets. And what does Guru Nanak do? Guru Nanak goes and writes an acrostic poetry with a spiritual theme. Now, acrostic poetry means a poem with a particular theme. And if you take the first words of each line, that would give you what this theme is about, what is the theme of the poem. So a very complex form of poetry, acrostic poetry. So a very young boy of 7 years goes and writes an acrostic poem when he is given the assignment of writing alphabets of a high spiritual theme. An example acrostic poem, not written by Guru Nanak of course, but just to understand what is acrostic poem. Shines brightly up in the sky, nice and warm on my skin. So three lines. If you take the first words of these three lines, it means S-U-N, sun. So the theme of the poem is sun, which means shines brightly up in the sky, nice and warm on my skin. And if you take the first letters of the sentences, it gives you what is the theme about. So such a complex poem Nanak writes at the age of 7. And what is the theme of the high spiritual theme? It is about the futility of that learning which takes into no, which does not take into account the rule of truth and love. And in the same poem he says that it is under this rule of truth and love that one has to grow and cure himself of the disease of egotism. So a young boy writing such a high spiritual poem. So a portion of the poem is given here. He says, true merit and reward they alone shall win, who meekly serve, who in their lives realize and practice truth. Why all this bustle for show and deceit, my friend? In a while or two, hence will thou go, this show will end. Why gamble thy life thus idly away? Hey to the Lord, at his feet thyself thou lay. What is doubt and what is illusion? Whatever pleaseth him is good. Impute no blame to others, my soul. On thy karma the blame doth lie in whole. As did I sow, so now I reap. I would blame none else for this my grief. So this is a small portion of the poem which Nanak wrote. So this incident leaves a very deep impression on the teacher who is supposed to teach Nanak in the village school. But still he reminds Nanak that your father wants you to become a village patwari, so you should first learn about worldly things and you should first take care of your worldly needs. And this young boy, Nanak, replies, will all that you wish to teach help me at the time when an account of this life must needs be rendered? So this is the question that he asks his village teacher. And then further he says, burn thy earthly cravings, grind their ashes well, and make thy ink therefrom. Let a pure high mind thy paper be, make love thy pen and heart thy writer. Then write as a teacher true doth write thee, then write as a teacher true doth guide thee. Write the name of God, write his praises. Write of the Lord that hath no limit, end or measure. O friend, learn to write. O friend, learn to write this account, so that when and where an account is called from thee, thou mayest win a mark of honor true. So this is the reply that Nanak gives to his teacher. So his teacher is also convinced that this is no ordinary boy, and he sees the divine self shining in Guru Nanak. And that is when, at the age of 7, Guru is added to his name and he begins to be called as Guru Nanak. And just a few years later, his father arranges for the sacred thread tying ceremony at his age of 9. And to the surprise of the priests and all his family members who are attending the ceremony, this young boy stops the priest when he is about to put the sacred thread and asks him, what is the purpose of this thread? And the priest replies that this is for the protection of your soul. So Nanak asks him, does it ever bound one's passions? Does it ever bound his foul tongue, his evil eye, his hands and feet to save him from going astray? Does it help me in doing all this? Does this thread help me in doing all this? This is the question that Guru Nanak asks the priest, and he outrightly rejects this thread tying ceremony, and instead of that he gives this wonderful teaching about the true meaning of the sacred thread. So again we can remember here that in all the smallest as well as the highest thing of the physical things that we see, Guru Nanak extracted the essence of it, the truth of it, the spiritual significance of it. He says about the sacred thread, made out of the cotton of compassion, spun into thread of contentment, knotted into knots of self-restraint, twisted with truthfulness. This is the sacred thread of the soul. If you have it, O Brahmin, then go ahead and put it on me. It breaks not, cannot be soiled by filth, cannot be burnt, cannot be lost. Blessed are the mortals, O Nanak, who wear such a thread about their necks. You buy a thread for 4 shells, bring it, and seated in an enclosure, put it on, whispering instructions into others' ears. So a guru the Brahmin becomes. Yet when he dies, the sacred thread falls away and the soul departs without it. So such profound teachings, and in such simple words, Nanak teaches the priest and everybody that is there, everybody who is attending the ceremony, as to what is the real meaning of sacred thread. Cotton of compassion, thread of contentment, the knots of self-restraint, twisted with truthfulness. The true meaning, he extracts the true meaning of the thread tying ceremony. And as the years advance, Nanak, this young boy, seeks seclusion, practices silence, and limits his food intake. His parents are naturally very concerned about the health of this boy, and they call a physician to check him and treat him, unaware of the fact that this great teacher is trying to cure the causes of suffering which lay deep in human heart. So he again says to physician, I quote, "Man's mind blind with desire sow the seeds of its own suffering. In pursuit of indulgence of the self, it forgets God and undergoes endless suffering. O ignorant physician, thy physic is of no avail. Suffering itself is a symptom of disease, as well as its cure, as well as its cure." So such a wonderful teaching that Nanak Dev gives to the physician. And when the boy grows a little bit, the boy becomes a young man, his father, who is still not convinced, though he has seen so many wonderful things, he still feels that this young boy is spending his time in profitless contemplation, interacting with these yogis who are contemplating in the outskirts of the forest of Talavandi. And he calls him and he says, "Now I'll give you some money, go and get a good bargain, go and to buy something." And he sends him on a trade expedition. But on the way to buy the goods, Nanak comes across hungry people and holy men, scantily clad, hungry, lean, and needing food. So he uses all the money that his father had given him to purchase food and clothing, and then freely distributes it to all the men whom he finds in the way who need it. So his father is very disappointed and angrily criticizes him and rebukes him. But Guru Nanak says that a true profit is to be had in selfless service. And it is at this point of time that Guru Nanak establishes the principle of langar. which we see even today in Gurudwars. So from time to time, Mehta Kalu, a man of the world and seeking after profit and trade, etc., he always kept on pressing his son to take up some profession for his living, but Nanak would skillfully avoid all that, and he would say that all your worldly professions have a spiritual counterparts in the inner realm, and that inner realm is the training ground for each mind and each soul. That is what he says, his father. And when Mehta Kalu suggests, why don't you take up agriculture, why don't you take up farming, he gives this teaching about what is true farming. He says, this body is the field, the mind is the plowman, modesty the irrigating water. I sow the seed of the divine name, and with the leveler of contentment, pulverize the crust of pride into true humility. In it the seed of love will prosper. Seated in the abode of truth, I behold its progress. Father, mammon accompanieth not a man. The world is deluded by it. Only a few walk out of the delusion and attain discrimination. This is what he says, he tells to his father. So at the age of 19, he is married to Mata Sulakni, and then onwards Nanak goes to live with his sister Nankani and her husband in Sultanpur. So there he takes up a job of selling grain for the government in order to support his household and family. So Nanak generously measured the grain in favor of the people who came in need of it, and he shared grain from his own rations with the poor and the needy. But one official lodges a complaint against Guru Nanak for distributing grain too freely. But again, miraculously, when the officials investigate this, they find that the storehouse is overflowing with grain. And when the accounts had been gone over, the book showed all monies accounted for and even a balance in favor of the government currency. And as it turns out, the government owed Guru Nanak back wages, and insisting that he had enough for his household already, Guru Nanak refuses the money owed and requests instead that the money that is owed to him by the government be distributed to the poor. So these are the incidents of in the life of Guru Nanak. And another important event happens at the age of 30, where each day after taking bath in the river, it so happens that one day after taking bath in the river, Guru Nanak just disappears. He takes bath, he goes into the water, and he never comes back. And after 3 days, he is declared dead, because his body is also not found. And but after 3 days' time, he appears from the river, and the first thing that he utters is, there is no Hindu, there is no Musalman. There is no Hindu, there is no Musalman. So he speaks of the one God and the one way which all human beings have to follow. So he proclaims that divinity is beyond the divisions which are created by mankind. So he speaks of the true universal brotherhood based on the fact that there is only one source, one self, one divinity, which is reflected in all beings, and all other things that we see in through our fleshly eyes are but illusions. So when he says that there is no Hindu, there is no Musalman, the Qazi of Sultanpur is enraged when he hears this. So he summons Nanak to take him to task for the contempt of the ruling Muslim community. And again, Nanak, the great enlightened one, he shows the Qazi what constitutes a true Muslim. Let's see what he says. I quote, "He who is firm in his faith has a right to be called a Muslim. His acts must accord with his faith in the Prophet. He must cleanse his heart of pride and greed. No more troubled by the two impostors, life and death." See, no more troubled by the two impostors, life and death. "Resigned to the will of God, knowing Him as the doer, freed from the domination of the self, compassionate to all things, such a one may call himself a Muslim." A true definition of not only a Muslim, a true definition of what all human beings should be. And further he addresses the Qazi and says, "In the mosque of love, spread the carpet of faith, enjoy only thy rightful earnings, follow the holy script, make restraint and modesty thy circumcision, moderation thy fast, right action thy pilgrimage to Kaaba, make truth thy spiritual guide, good works thy creed, thus become a Muslim." So we see in these teachings and in the teachings that he gave to the Hindu priest, we see that he outrightly rejects all formal ritualistic worship and ceremonies. Instead, he draws the minds of the people to the spiritual counterparts which are real. All these outer things that we do are but representations of that, and in themselves they are meaningless. So Guru Nanak extracts the spiritual meaning of all these rituals and rejects the rituals themselves and shows the true way for all mankind. And the five prayers which the Muslims do in each day, he says that each one of these prayer is supposed to develop a virtue in the person who is doing the prayer. And what are the five virtues? He says each prayer for one virtue, and it is as follows. 1. Truthfulness. 2. Right livelihood. 3. Charity. 4. Right motive and pure heart. 5. The praise of God. So this is what Guru Nanak teaches to the Qazi. And for nearly 20-25 years, he is accompanied by another saintly person by name Mardana. And he journeys with Mardana. Mardana playing an instrument and Guru Nanak singing these spiritual poems. He journeys to Mardana. There are five great journeys which he does, covering thousands of kilometers, like parts of East India, Bangladesh, Pakistan, the southern India, the Sri Lanka, the regions of Kashmir, Nepal, Tibet, Bhutan, South China, regions of Pakistan, Afghanistan, Iran, Iraq, Egypt, Israel, Syria, Jordan, Saudi Arabia, including Mecca, and some parts of Africa, and the northern India and Pakistan, of course. So he travels very extensively with Mardana as his spiritual companion. And in one of his journeys, he comes across a person by name Sajjan. This person, Sajjan, is actually a thug, a dacoit, but he would have set up a place with the Hindu temple and the Muslim mosque in a particular town, and he would offer services and be very gentle and polite and feed the pilgrims who are passing through the way, and give them all that they need, and give them place to sleep. But in the night, in the dark of the night, he would kill them, murder them, and take all their belongings. And in the morning, he would again be the pious, the so-called pious Sajjan, with the beads in his hand and white robes. So Mardana and Nanak arrive at this place, and Nanak, having opened his inner vision, he easily sees through all the pretenses of the people. And of course Sajjan offers the place just like he offers it to all other pilgrims, and of course Nanak accepts it. But during the course of his conversation with Sajjan, he very symbolically indicates that he knows the true character of Sajjan and what Sajjan should do in order to repent, and what Sajjan should do in order to come out of that evil ways. And then Sajjan is shaken with fear and he repents for all the evil that he did, and then he takes up the teachings of Guru Nanak. Of course, there is a very nice poem which he composed during that to which is addressed to Sajjan, but we will not go through it now that we have very less time. And same case, same thing happens in the case of the Qazi of Sultanpur, who is hell-bent on making Nanak understand the importance of the Muslim traditions, invites him to the namaz, and Nanak gladly accepts it and goes. And while the Qazi is Qazi and the Nawab is doing the prayers, he just stands and laughs at them. So after the prayer, he is asked for an explanation of why he did this, and he says, "This is not the prayer that I accepted to come to. The prayer that I seek is the mental devotion, the mental and the moral devotion." And he says, while you are doing the prayers, your mind was wandering somewhere. You were thinking of the foal that is in your house, which has given birth to a new foal. And the Nawab was thinking about how good his servants will be in buying the horses in some other place, and so on and so forth. So he easily sees through the pretenses of the people, and he shows them what is the true way instead. And coming to the teachings of Guru Nanak about God, very, very important teachings. His idea of God is expressed in this one word, which is Ek Omkar, which means the one God, the one self, the one name, the one sound. So this beginning verse of the, what is given in the Guru Granth Sahib is seen as the Moola Mantra of the Sikh tradition, and it says this: there is one God, its name is Truth, it is the creative being, without fear and without halt, beyond time, immortal, the spirit which pervades the universe. It is not born, it does not die to be born again, it is self-existent. So this is the idea of God, and what we see very nicely explained in the 13th chapter of the Gita. So further, Nanak speaks about the hukum of the God. What is the hukum of the God? The divine hukum. The divine hukum is the same as what the Vedic traditions speak about as Rata or as Dharma. The one law. The law which is the Lord itself. And he says it is man's duty to seek an understanding of the divine hukum, and his whole life should be in accord with it. And he says the primary cause of bondage and all confusion is humai or ahankara, egoism. This idea of oneself being separate from all other beings, and oneself being separate from the Ek Omkar, arises because of this ahankara, humai. So it separates man from the primal reality, and it dims the divine spark which is within each one of us. So he says that the meaning and purpose of human existence itself centers in the understanding and living life in accordance with this ek, or oneness, or unity, or homogeneity. So he broadly classifies humanity into two classes. That is, those who belong to those who have the mindset of tending towards the divinity, the one, the ek omkar, I call them the Haridas. And then there are the servants of the mammon, the servants of the material world, whom he called as the Mayadas, the Haridas and the Mayadas. So further, he implies in his teachings that we must be aware that all the things that you can see, you can touch, you can perceive is impermanent. And what is permanent is that ek, that oneness, and there is that spark within each one of us. And our whole life and all the activities of life must be centered such that the understanding of the hukum of this one life which is within us and living the life in accordance with it. This is what Nanak implies. And he was a firm believer and teacher of karma and reincarnation. At the very young age of 7, we saw how Nanak says that do not blame others for whatever happens in your life, that it is your own karma which is giving rise to all that is happening in your life, the smallest as well as the biggest thing. So as you sow, so you reap. So he clearly mentions the doctrine of karma. And about reincarnation, he says this: he who dies with the divine word on his lips dies to death. He dies to death. Death itself is death for him, for such a person. He need not die a second time. But without the word, people wander in error. They die only to be reborn over and over again. It reminds of Shankara's words that you may be involved in hundreds of things, but unless the oneness is realized, you may spend millions of years, but the final aim will not be reached unless we realize the unity of life. So Nanak penned around 7,500 lines of poetic verses, which were later included in the scripture of Guru Granth Sahib. And he himself, after 20 years of wandering, he comes back to one place, probably Kharagpur or some such place which I forget, and he takes up the life of a householder and earns his living by means of agriculture, farming and agriculture. So he does not recommend hatha yogic practices of torturing one's body and so on and so forth, but says that householder's life, he stresses importance upon householder's life. So there are the three great pillars of the Sikh tradition, which is, first, the emphasis on a daily engagement in a personal relationship with the divinity within oneself through contemplation, meditation, etc. That is the first pillar. The second being life as a householder engaged in honest employment. And thirdly, ethics of altruistic service and the sharing of honest earnings. So we find that in simple words, through by way of word and by way of precept and example, Guru Nanak showed the life of true householder with the four purusharthas in mind, the four purusharthas which the Vedic philosophy teaches. And he clearly stresses important on the Parama Purusharta of the Vedic tradition, which is realization of unity, of oneness being the final aim, and all the other three purusharthas being as the aid towards that. So Guru Nanak gives up his physical body in 1539 in Kartarpur. Yeah, that's the town where he takes up his life as a, I mean, he goes on his journey of wandering and teaching for 20-25 years, and he comes back to Kartarpur and his family joins him there, and he takes up resumes his life of householder and takes up agriculture, and that is where he gives up his body in 1539 at the age of 69.